Content discussed on this show is not necessarily the opinion of the cast of Spiritually Raw, and topics quite often are for mature audiences only. So, if you happen to have your 13-year-old listening in...
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Spiritually Raw. Thank you very much for tuning in today. We have a great show for you planned today. And remember, you can tune in and check us out every Monday and every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern here on BBS Radio. And if you're an expert or authority or have an amazing personal story that revolves around the supernatural, we definitely want to know about it. And all you have to do is go to spirituallyraw.com. So your turn.
That's right, yep. And make sure to also follow us on Facebook at Spiritually Raw and join our Facebook group. Secrets to Radio Riches. You're only one show away.
Speaking of show, we got a couple of great guests on, right?
We sure do. Sherry Hobson, karmic counselor specializing in analyzing karmic patterns from the past, present, and future lives. She reads the emotional energy that creates blocks and disease. She's worked with numerous medical doctors throughout the United States on cancer research, utilizing her medical intuitive abilities.
Welcome, Sherry Show.
Hi, good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
So excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here also. So, karmic counselor. So, tell us, like, what does a karmic counselor do?
As a karmic counselor, I work on the emotional patterns that are bringing in the reactions that you're creating on the earth plane, and the reactions that are from past life, our present life, that are actually blocking you from getting to where you want to be and where you the desired outcome that you're working on.
Sherry, do you believe in this whole concept that we come in to say, okay, I want to experience this karma from a past life? I mean, do we actually consciously make that choice?
We don't consciously make that choice. We have a belief pattern that we follow, and then the universe has a tendency to prove our belief system wrong by creating negative karma for us.
Wait a minute. Did you just say the universe creates negative karma for us?
Well, through the mirrors and through our experiences, we have a negative concept of that. And so we believe that, you know, something that that we're not worthy enough. And then the universe has that mirror show us back that we're not worthy. And that's the karmic reflection.
Is that supposed to be like an illusion?
Or like a law of attraction kind of thing?
I never heard that before.
Oh, it is the law of attraction, and it is also the illusion that we create within the universe.
Now, as a karmic counselor, can you, if someone comes to you and they say, oh man, all this, let's just call it, let's say they have all this bad stuff happening to them or whatever, they can't feel like they can't break the cycle, are they coming to you to help break that cycle? Is that what you help them with?
Correct. We look at where that cycle began, what lifetime that cycle began in, how it began, and why the soul is actually choosing to experience it. Because most of the time when we're experiencing something negative, it's actually for our benefit because we're learning something within that. Because if somebody is learning, for instance, an aspect of respect, they'll throw themselves into a reincarnation where they're growing up in a family of disrespect to learn respect. Right? Because we only learn normally when we're being hit up the head by 2x4s and when it's causing some pain, it's normally the catalyst that creates a change for us. And we go, ouch, that hurts. So we start to create that change, right? And that evolution through, oh, to be respected, I need to do this, or to be respected, I need to do that. I don't want to do what my family did. I want to do the opposite. And so we'll gear ourselves up through reincarnation to learn those lessons. But it's important to kind of understand, like, why it started and how it started to move away from it to start breaking that pattern to become more aware of it.
So let me ask you this. I have a friend of mine, and her granddaughter is 4 years old, maybe five, and she's been having seizures, like radical seizures, for years, and the doctors cannot figure out why and where it's coming. And it dawned on me the other day when I was talking to my friend, I was just writing information about your material. And I said to my friend, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, could it be possible that this child is carrying something over from a past lifetime.
Exactly. Hmm. Your daughter's friend had passed in a car accident in her last lifetime. And she still has the wounds in the shoulder and the neck area. And the seizures are actually a reaction from, believe it or not, past life medications that she was on.
Oh, my heavens.
And she's holding that memory of it. Oh. And she's still working through that. Now, also, but there's some duality here that you have to understand, is that her mother also has some karmic aspect within it as well. Mm. And so her karma that's involved in it is about measuring up as a mother to feel
that's
like
true.
She's a good enough mother. And so she's constantly being challenged to prove that she's a good enough mother.
Oh, my God. Well, she's young. She had the baby young. So she's a young mm-hmm. mom. So mm-hmm. how would they... Okay, so I'm going to relay this message to her as soon as like we get off the show, but...
Why don't you send her to the show?
Well, I'm going to, but the show's not going to be for a couple days, so by the time it gets pre-recorded. But so would they need to clear both the daughter's past life and the mother's past life? And would that stop the seizures?
It will help to start to heal the seizures. She also has some neurological aspects that need some nutritional aspects to it as well. But what happens is when we have a trauma from a past life that we don't heal from, we actually create what's called a karmic chakra. And that's different than our source chakras. A karmic chakra actually interprets the energy different through the meridian points. And so the karmic chakras need to be released. A lot of times we do that naturally by learning the lesson, like you're the mother learning that, oh, I do measure up as a mother. I am a good mother, and accepting it rather than constantly questioning yourself on it. And the daughter would actually get over it by the aspects of control, because her issues are no control. Because of a car accident, she had no control in the car accident. She carried on that no control into this lifetime. And so when she would learn the lessons of control, she would actually heal that karmic chakra, which would allow the body to heal and move past it as well.
That would be absolutely miraculous.
You think so? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. She does have some nutritional aspects as well that need to be attended to.
I could see that.
Okay, let me get a question in here. I'd like to wrap my head around this a little tighter if I can, and also hopefully for our audience too. So, Sherry, when you are, let's say you go to call it heaven or wherever it is, when you pass from a previous life and you're there, and then you make a conscious decision like April's friend's daughter that says, okay, this is how I'm going to live. Do they, when they're at that place, do they realize the actual physical and emotional and mental grief that they're actually going to experience, or do they just do it because it's so perfect over there and they're like, what the hell, let me give it a shot?
No. We're actually, there's times where our energy gets pulled back into the life pattern as well into the earth plane. I have had clients that did not want to come back to the earth plane, and because they rejected coming back to the earth plane, they really did not want to come back here to suffer anymore or to go through some karmic lessons that they knew they were going to have to go through. That actually causes emotional issues of failure and certain fears on the earth plane, like tripping over your own feet, of constantly never being able to be where you desired to be or doing what you desired to do, is because of that energy that you carried over from that, right? And so there are certain people that it's almost like a gravitational pull, that you can't stay on the other side for too long if your energy needs to be healed. And we heal on this side, we don't heal on the other side, because this is where we create.
So
I want to make sure I just got what you said. So are you saying if people, like children, pass early, it's because they are not ready to heal themselves now in this lifetime?
No,
they needed to come here to heal. They don't heal over there; they heal over here.
Right.
So if they had some finished healing,
if a child passes early, there's certain things that a life pattern is either they're coming in as a teacher soul for the family to learn loss and grief. So there's times where we lose an infant, we lose a toddler, lose a small child, that sometimes that soul is a teacher soul. And within the master soul groups, there's different types of souls within a master soul group, and they'll come over as a teacher. And there's other times where they're setting up, leaving early to learn a lesson about being more grateful about what they have, or being setting up the next lifetime. And it doesn't have to do with this lifetime. It has to do with their next lifetime.
How do you explain stillbirths? Does that fall into that category?
Yes, that falls into that category. Mm. Most of the time, though, a soul with a stillbirth, if there's a soul attached to the body, that soul is coming in as a teacher with a stillbirth. Mm. I have had, on a very, very rare occasion, and, you know, I've done hundreds of thousands of readings, on very, very rare occasions, I've had it that the soul has rejected the life plan because there's something has changed within that life plan at the last minute.
That makes sense.
Do people come back here when they feel like they've completed, let's call their karma, or surpassed it, whatever you want to call it? Is there any of those living in the earth right now, or our dimension, or a plane, whatever you want to call it? Is there anybody like that?
Very, very few. There is a few that have reincarnated, that have bypassed mastering their DNA, so to speak. But the numbers are so extremely small.
Would that be like a ascended master, like a Jesus, Buddha, you know, kind of thing like that?
Krishna.
They would be more of bringing more angelic energy into the planet, of more guidance and angelic energy to heal things rather than to heal themselves.
So do angels and spirit guides have karma? Can you have karma on the other side, or is karma only when you get to this world?
As far as I've seen, karma has only been on this world, not on the other world.
What is that other world when you see
That's an interesting question. I've never really focused in on that because my focus is on getting people to where they want to be and getting people the desired outcome that they desire. So I have not, and I've looked lifetime to lifetime that we carry those energy patterns on the physical plane and we attract them within our reincarnations, but I've never looked on the other side, existence within the other side.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. What's your thoughts on animals and karma? Do they have karma?
No.
That's what I think.
No, animal souls are a little bit different. They don't express emotions. You have to understand that karma comes from our emotions, and karma comes from the way we react to our emotions, right? And so animals don't have that same outcome to their emotions that we do.
That's an interesting point, because I always thought maybe they didn't have karma because they're pure and perfect, but is it more because they don't react how we react to certain things?
Mm-hmm. They don't create the same as we create, and they don't react the same as we react.
That's interesting.
They're always just happy, like the
dogs. They're always happy. Yeah, the tail's always wagging.
They just dive on you. You know what I mean? They just dive on you right there. Hey, Sarge, is that you back there?
Yep, I'm here.
I'm looking at you now. Okay, see you, buddy. So what you got there? What's your thoughts on all this?
So are you saying that the only ones that can create this karmatic experience is people who have choice? So, again, because that's what it sounds like. It's like, since we are a being of choosing, then we can choose one way or we can choose another. So hopefully I'm following that, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. We can choose one way or we can choose another. It depends on how we react into a situation. Depends on our karma. But it also depends on how our body takes that energy back in. And how our body reacts to that energy, right? Because most all diseases are from our reactions, right? And the way that our body interprets the energy around us or interprets the energy that we're feeding it.
I want to talk about more. I know we have to take a break, but she just hit on something that I want to talk about. So,
okay, well, everybody, we got to go and get a word in from our sponsors. When we come back, I want to learn more about soul groups. She hit on something you want to talk about, soul memory, so much to talk about, so little time, but we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. Hang tight.
Make 2020 an incredible year. Live the life you desire in your relationships, your career, your financial freedom, your health. It's all possible. Shari Hobson, an internationally known psychic counselor with over 20 years of experience as a karma and past life analyst, helps you move your dreams into reality. Her energy work in clearing and releasing blocks is being recognized by spiritual leaders and doctors from around the world. Clear your path to your purpose, passion, and potential. Book your session today at SherryHobson.com. That's SherryHobson.com.
To go where no mind has gone before with Michael Telstar. Michael Telstar is a master remote viewer and holds 7 world records in escapology. Learn to remote view and become the ultimate psychic detective. Find lost objects, locate treasure, and missing persons. Master of mentalism, Michael Telstar is making a special appearance at the Mega UFO Conference February 15th to the 22nd at the Aquarius Resort in Laughlin, Nevada. Join him as he amazes you with his entertaining demos to bend metal, levitate objects, and so much more. Michael Telstar is available for events and seminars on remote viewing, out-of-body adventures, and lucid dreaming. Connect with Michael Telstar at 437-234-7713 or MichaelTelstar.com. That's Michael, TelStarr.com. Get worldwide exposure. Be heard live on hundreds of the world's largest live broadcast stations. Spiritually Raw, the ass-whipping truth wants you. We expose and explore controversial truths, myths, theories, and dogmas surrounding the spirit world, and no topic is taboo. Do you have an amazing or unusual personal story? Are you an author, expert, or authority in ancient mysteries, conspiracy theories, UFOs, aliens, world religions, or anything revolving around the spirit world? If so, then Spiritually Raw wants you. Be a featured guest, highlight your products and services, and showcase your personality. We book up really fast, so go to spirituallyraw.com and submit your request today. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spiritually Raw. Thank you very much. We're with Shari Hobson. So, Shari, where we left off was so much there, but can you tell us about soul groups? So do people incarnate as groups like that, or is it a one-on-one thing?
No, it's both. We have family soul groups that we reincarnate in, and that's because like energy attracts like energy, so that a lot of the times with reincarnation, the DNA will follow through family patterns. So we'll reincarnate within the families, but we also have what's called master soul groups. The master soul groups are karmic soul groups and stuff that we're working on, and there's 12 master soul groups, and that correlates with all of the master chakras. And so with all the source chakras. And so there's the ruler, the builder, the communicator, the teacher, the healer, the counselor. There's 12 of them that we work within, and that's our karmic patterns in which our lessons, our main karmic lessons fall within.
Let me ask you a question related to, let's say, suicide. Okay, so when someone commits suicide, have they completed karma for the most part, or have they given up and said, I'll try it again another time?
That's basically giving up and I'll try it again later.
That's giving up and try it again later. Okay, so, yep.
What is soul memory?
Soul memory is coming in from our DNA patterns. We operate a lot off of our soul memories, and a lot of people don't understand that. But we also have ancestral soul memory, and we have our direct soul memory. Ancestral soul memory is the DNA going back through the generations of our ancestors, where we'll pick up different emotional habits through that DNA. Our direct soul memories are from direct reincarnations of where our souls have been before in different different lifetimes. We have a lot of fears and phobias come from those. A lot of diseases come from those soul memories. A lot of aches and pains in our body will come from those soul memories. And that is from... that comes from not only the DNA, but also the karmic chakras and the meridian points.
That's what I wanted to ask you right before we went to break. You had made a comment about disease. Mm-hmm. So can we clarify this now then? So are you saying that disease is made stems from whatever you're creating in your mind, as opposed to it's airborne or something. Maybe I was working in the coal mine or.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it interesting that you'll be in a room full of people that have colds and you won't pick it up, but another person will pick it up, right?
Yeah. Right.
It's because of the emotional reaction within that. So it's just like somebody being allergic to strawberries, another person not being allergic to strawberries. It has an emotional foundation to it. And so getting down to the emotion and the level of that emotion, right? If somebody has abandonment issues, but they've only been abandoned once versus somebody who suffers from abandonment every day has a different degree of that energy, right? And then so they'll start a disease where they'll start to break down according to that energy. And they'll start with a thyroid issue or a pancreatic issue based on the level that they're feeling that energy, right? But if you feel something once, you're not going to react to it. But if you feel something over and over and over and over again, now think about if you've been feeling it for the last 200 or 300 years, you know, through the reincarnation, you know, that disease sets in and correlates with it. So every disease has an emotional basis to it.
So then essentially you're creating your own disease, right?
Correct.
So how do we go about releasing our past karma? What's the process?
There's several different processes. When I go through with a client, I'll nail the exact point in which it actually started, where the belief system changed. And we have to come down and look at what that belief system is and then reframing it within their mind of coming up with a different belief system, so that when they're in that situation, like the aspect earlier today, I was working with a couple of therapy, and each one of them felt like they weren't heard, right? And it's not that they weren't being heard. They often had fights about not getting what they desired. So it wasn't that they weren't heard, it's what they weren't getting. They weren't getting what they desired. So the new belief system is, I'm always heard, we're just on different pages, right?
So that's,
and that creates a different outcome to that energy that's cycling back and forth between the two of them.
So that's interesting. So you'll work with, when you're working with people, it's not just a one-on-one. It can be like, you know, relationships too, that you'll sit there and you'll work through that process with them. And will you approach it from a karmic standpoint?
Yes. You know, I also sit on the board of directors as the CSO for a company, chief spiritual officer on the board. And we'll sit down and we'll look at all the differences in the way that employees will communicate with the bosses and the bosses communicating with the employees, and how everybody's reacting to that energy and how that's flowing through the company. You know, so, and do it on many different levels.
Do we choose our parents and our family?
For the most part, we do.
Yeah,
we say from time to time where it hasn't been the situation, but I would say for the majority of the time it is.
So I want to go back to the one thing about the disease in the body, since your mind is creating the disease. So, and it's creating it from the emotion, the negative emotions that's manifesting in your mind. So is it not possible then, if you have a happy mind, is it impossible or is it possible for disease to start to manifest?
If you have a happy mind and you have happy emotions, you got the majority of the battle won. But if you put yourself in the middle of a cesspool and you're swimming in like a lake full of bacteria, you're not doing yourself any good, right?
Right.
But your body will have a healthier and happier immune system to fight that bacteria off.
Ah.
Speaking about immune system, Sherry, tell us about your work you've done with medical doctors and a biochemist.
Oh, you know, I got to do some fabulous work with a biochemist on cancer research, because I can see inside of a cell and how certain treatments were affecting cancer patients. I could see how different dosages and stuff like that were affecting the cancer cells and how they were actually affecting the tumors, and what the body was reacting to and what the body wasn't reacting to. So it was there was some incredible research about seeing some parasitic aspects of cancer and how cancer was also was starting on a parasitic level rather than on a viral level.
That's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. What is fragmentation of the soul, and why does the soul fragment itself?
Fragmentation happens when we have such a trauma or an emotional issue that we leave a piece of ourselves in a certain time period. I had a client, it's so funny, but she would always tripping, and she's always falling on her face. No matter, she could be walking on a flat sidewalk, and she was always falling on her face and always tripping and having these major injuries from falling down all the time.
My cousin does that too.
Which one?
Debbie.
She?
Into a past life, where she went into a past life, and she had died being seasick on a boat, and she was extremely ill and had no equilibrium from being so seasick. Hmm. And so she had fragmented herself because she was so disappointed about not making it to where she needed to be or where she felt she wanted to be. She fragmented herself in that time period of being sick. And so she was existing there on the boat, existing here in this lifetime at the same time. And so when we released that fragment, and I had to do some healing work on that and release the fragment, after that point, she never fell down. She never had balance problems, and she just was starting walking all the time. So fragmentation is when we're existing in two different places at the same time, and we're bringing an emotional illness or we're bringing that emotion in to our present day.
You know, when you start to understand this, because you can't deny it, because it makes logical sense, then you're like, Jesus, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it explains so much of why things happen to people and how things happen as well.
So what's
right? That's behind a lot of phantom pains that people have. Like they'll die on a battlefield of being hit in the knee or shot in the arm or whatever, and they'll have a pain there, but the doctors can't find anything. And normally that's a fragmentation from a past life.
Interesting. Gotcha.
What's next for you, Sherry?
What's next?
Yeah. What's up with the famous Sherry Hobson there?
I am working on a book right now. I've done some thermographic imaging projects where we've taken chronically ill people and went in and did some thermographic imaging and their medical records and went into their past lives to clear their past lives and then redone the thermographic imaging to show how the energy has shifted and then the medical reports to show how releasing the trauma from the past lives changed their medical aspect. And I'm working on that book right now.
Right on, right on. Very cool. Sherry Hobson. So tell everybody, Sherry, how they can get a hold of you, how they can connect with you.
Through my website at sherryhobson.com. And you can book an appointment online. And also, I do have some classes that are coming up on some energy classes that'll be beginning in the beginning of February. That'll be listed on my website shortly.
That'll be listed on your website also. All right, right on. Thank you for being on here, Sherry. You've been a great guest. We love having you. We got to take a word from our sponsor, everybody, and we will be right back with our next guest, Michael Telstar. Hang tight.
Step into your authentic self and find genuine power with Gina Gardiner, number one international best-selling author, motivational speaker, empowerment coach, and transformational leadership trainer. Gina suffered a serious accident at 29, leaving her paralyzed and learning how to walk not once but twice. It's not the challenges which define us, but what we do with them. You are not broken and you are enough. Gina has dedicated her life to helping people recognize that you have a choice to be happy, to be successful, and to live life full of joy and fulfillment. Access your inner resources to live life fearlessly. Find your true purpose and feel self-confident. Connect with Gina Gardiner at genuinely-you.com. That's Gina Gardiner at genuinely-you.com.
Welcome to the world of Jeff Dawson, 35-year road construction veteran to a multi-genre author whose books range from a true love story of his soulmate to a historical perspective of vampires versus the Third Reich. Jeff's unique perspective on life and the way he dealt with the back-to-back tragedies will amaze you with eye-opening revelations. Lose yourself in Jeff's books, such as A Terror at the Sterling, Love's True Second Chance, and Final Delivery, and so much more. Visit Amazon.com and get copies of Jeff Dawson's books today. Jeff's books also make great gifts and great stocking stuffers.
Shirley Enebrad knows firsthand how to cope with the range of emotions, uncertainty, and grief, both during illness and worst-case scenario, after death. To help others, she's authored two grief books, Over the Rainbow Bridge, the story of her young son, Corey, and his inspiring journey as he battled leukemia, and Six World Lessons on Coping with Grief, 100 Lessons to Help You and Your Loved Ones Deal with Loss. To purchase her books, go to www.shirleyenebrad.com.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to Spiritually Raw. Thank you very much there. We were with Sherry Hobson. That was a great guest, so make sure you check her out at sherryhobson.com. And we got a great guest here, Michael Telstar. So
yeah,
tell
really,
about Michael Telstar.
I certainly will. This is really cool. We've never really had an escapologist ever before, so this is going to be neat. Michael Telstar, he is a supernatural entertainer, paranormalist, and remote viewer. Michael Telstar is a master of mentalism and holds 7 world records in escapology. At the age of 17, he was the youngest person to perform Houdini's water cell torture escape. Michael strongly believes in mind over matter and the belief that we are more than our physical selves.
All right, Michael, welcome to the show.
Wow, thank you for having me.
Yeah, that's great. So at the age of 17, this is when you were the youngest person. How did you even get into this?
That's a good question, really, because I'm not sure what the answer is. But when I was 5 years old, I used to go door to door collecting locks. I used to ask people if they had any broken locks. And my mother remembers me going door to door and keeping an eye on me. And as you know, Houdini was an escape artist, and I took locksmithing up at 14 years old. And now I'm not saying anything to the effect that I'm reincarnated or that I'm Houdini. I know that I'm not, right? But I did have a fascination with locks for some reason. So I got into escapes after I read about a book about Houdini. As a matter of fact, I read it from the very library that I'm in. I was, I think, 8 years old when I came in this very library here and got a book on his life. And when I read it, I became fascinated by it.
So did you feel like an instant connection to Houdini?
Well, I felt something. I felt about his ability to be able to get out of any physical constraint. I thought that was kind of cool, you know, to read when you're a kid. And I studied him, and I read everything I could about him, and got, you know, started out with 100-foot ropes, you know, being tied up and getting out of straitjackets and then going on to the water tank escapes. And the thing about the escapes I realized is that they were real. If you made a mistake, you can get hurt. They weren't illusions, right? So that also kind of fascinated me as well.
So to learn these escapes, was it trial and error? Did you have a playbook by Houdini? How did you figure it out?
You have to practice, trial and error, absolutely. You have to practice, practice and practice. I practiced holding my breath underwater for 3-4 minutes. I got myself in good physical condition. I practiced, being able to move my shoulders in weird ways, and my hands and my body, became a bit of a contortionist. And basically I went to the Houdini Museum when it was located in Niagara Falls, Ontario. It was there for 60 years, and I went there many times before they finally sold the place, and read everything I could, you know, on Houdini. And so I studied it, and I got into it. And sometimes I wonder why I really got into it, and because it was physically demanding, and it wasn't easy transporting a 400-pound tank, you know, and filling it up with 2 metric tons of water and doing all these other things. But I did enjoy it when I did do it. And then when I did it, I was named Scott Free. That was my stage name.
Okay, got it. Got it.
What was his stage name? Well, say that again. I didn't catch that. What was
Scott Free. And I got it from a comic book hero. Right. Got it from a superhero in a comic book.
Tell me about this remote viewing. You hear about this a lot. So I don't know a lot of, I think the FBI or the CIA, you know, hire remote viewers. I mean, how does that even work? So how can you paint a picture for us? Like, how does someone remote view? Like, what does that look like?
Well, maybe that's why I was on mute there. I couldn't get off mute for a while. They don't want me to talk about it. remote viewing was developed by the Stanford Research Institute, and it's a methodology. It's an inherent ability to transcend time and space and to bring back information from people, places, and or objects that are remote in time and space. So it's not a standalone feature. So it's the modern term for clairvoyance, right? And it sounds, you know, it's more modern. And basically, you can teach it's the methodology. You can take anybody with no psychic ability whatsoever and teach them a protocol and how to use that ability. So you don't have to be psychic already, but if you do, it'll increase your intuition and your psychic ability. But if you don't feel you have any, then what I basically do is I teach you the methodology and get you to open up. And it takes time, of course, and it takes practice. But anybody can absolutely learn it. Different variables, different, you know, not everybody is going to have the same ability like learning to play a violin or taking up martial arts. You can get your black belt in 1 year or 7 years. Some people will be natural and some people will be, take the more time, you know, to learn the techniques. But anyone can learn it. And I haven't had anybody that I've done, that I've taught about 2,500 students that I haven't gotten to remote view something, some aspect of a target.
How does that setting work? So when you're interviewing these students, is it all in a group setting? Do you do this with people maybe over Skype, over the phone kind of thing?
Well, you know, it's not impossible to do it over Skype, right? But it's always better in person. And there's, you know, they're basically the there are six stages in remote viewing. There's a remote viewing, coordinate remote viewing, intermediate remote viewing, and then there is the extended remote viewing. So they utilize different methodologies and techniques. And basically, you teach the student first how to get into the alpha brainwave state, which is a focused state of attention, and then you go from there. So, but a group setting is good. Because you create a morphogenic field effect, and when one person starts doing it, then the others follow suit. You know, so it is kind of a better in a group setting.
What is mentalism?
Oh, well, mentalism is, I regard myself probably more these days as a paranormalist, but basically it's utilizing some scientific protocols with some spiritual principles. And it's a basic form of mental magic. So you become adept at body reading, you know, face reading, also picking up on the unconscious. So being a remote viewer, and I call myself that, not a psychic, I've learned to develop the methodologies. I had a natural intuitive ability, so it increased my ability in that regard. So I'm able to do a lot of feats of mind that the average, you know, mentalist could not do. So paranormalist would probably be the better term for me these days.
So what is like Chris Angel considered, and how does he do it? How does spirituality and magic, I mean, I understand how it can combine and make something just absolutely mind-blowing, but really, how does it work? How does it actually work?
The Chris Angel is more of an illusionist. Okay, he's an illusionist, and I liked it when he was on TV. David Blaine is more in the mind over matter field, so I admire him more. So his feats have to do with more mind over matter, using his mind and body, doing feats and accomplishing his feats. But Chris Angel was more of an illusionist,
right?
So utilizing, you know, people in the audience, extras, people that were already there. And you know, basically it was a show, a format that was predetermined. David Blaine, though, is more of somebody that I've admired greatly. And I did some of the feats 20 years ago that he did on TV, except that his was shown on TV. But I've done the underwater coffin escape, you know, being buried in a coffin and so on and so forth. And so there's a difference between, you know, when you're doing the escapes and the illusion. So it's like the difference between reality and virtual reality.
So, question. I saw David Blaine years ago and he levitated.
Yes.
And
yes, so
does that have anything, is that possible? Can you levitate? And if so, is it caused or completed by mind over matter?
Well, that's you know, the levitation that he did, there's about 25 different types of levitations that you can do. And the levitation that he did was a beauty. It is an illusion, but it is beautiful, and I do it myself. I've done it myself. And I have it on my YouTube video for people who want to see me doing it there in public. And but to be able to really levitate, to be able to fly physically and levitate physically, mm-hmm. I believe only, you know, certain shamans and certain people in the world that can do it, and they're not showing the public that they can do it.
Right, they're not entertainers, right?
They're not doing it, you know, for that reason, you know, for that, you know, for their money or whatever it might be or whatever. But I do believe you can physically levitate and fly. You know, that is possible to do that. Not impossible. But you have to be at a certain state where you have to be zero point energy in your body. Okay. You know, you have to be a certain state of mind. And
Michael,
it's
hold
not
on.
Easy. I have not done it myself, but I have made my body lighter.
Hold that thought, Michael. We got to take a quick break. A word from our sponsor. We'll be right back. I want to hear more about levitation and
flying. Yeah, how do you make your body lighter?
Like that. So we'll be right back after work, everybody. Don't go away. Come join the Ascension Journey in 432 HZ with Scott Howard as he brings a new genre of music to the world called Source Music. Music helping to raise the frequency of the world. To listen and learn more, visit his website at scotthowardmusic.com. That's scotthowardmusic.com.
Successful online, you have to have a predictable system that takes the visitor from just being a visitor to a buyer. Do you need more leads, customers, and sales? If your books and services are not selling and your business is not growing, then you need a website audit to get to the root of the issue. Get a free 20-point website and social media audit report today.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to Spiritually Raw. Thank you very much. We are with Michael Telstar, a master of mentalism. We've got all these seven world records and escapology, all this really cool stuff. So, Michael, I want to get back to the...
How do you make your body lighter?
Yeah. How do you make your body lighter? And then I want to talk to you about when you said, like, David Blaine, that was more of an illusion. So you don't think that he, per se,
no,
actually...
No, the other one, Chris Angel's an illusionist.
But I think... But no.
David Blaine's more mind over matter.
Mind over matter.
Yes,
but
he's still... The actual levitation is still an illusion.
So he just made you see that. But in your opinion, there are people out there that actually yogi shamans that can do that.
I've heard of people who have told me personally that they've witnessed that, but it wasn't in the public domain.
What about time travel? Is that possible?
You can time travel, not physically, but you can time travel in the out of body experience. Certainly, you can. We had targets where we viewed, you know, what we call past time, you know, and also future time. So that's absolutely possible, and that's doable.
When you're remote viewing, getting back to that, are you actually having an out of body experience, or is that something that you're just scanning with your mind?
Oh. Yeah, remote viewing is the difference between remote viewing and out of body experience is that for a long time I didn't know the difference when I was younger, but remote viewing is where you're basically either sitting in a relaxed position and you're in an alpha brainwave state, and then you go to the target, whatever the target might be. So it's not used as a standalone feature. Remote viewing is used with other modalities of getting information, but it can give you pieces of a puzzle that are missing. So it has been taught to law enforcement. There's medical field that's been taught to, in the United States, especially they're open to it. And I've had some students and some clients that have been in law enforcement and the medical field. So you can do that. But time travel, you can do that in either the OBE state, where you go in your energy body, right, a duplicate of your physical body. But when you remote view, you don't have any sense of a body. You cannot see your hands. You cannot see your feet. But when you project and you're in your out of body in experience, you can look and see your energy body. You know, you've got two hands, you know, 10 fingers, things like that.
Can you do it at will? Or do you have to really focus and meditate and go into a whole, like, you know, process?
Well, remote viewing, I've learned to do the remote viewing at will, the out of body experience at will, and lucid dreaming. So I have 3-4 lucid dreams, or 3-4 nights a week where I have lucid dream. I have OBs, you know, 2-3 times a week consciously. And the you know, the remote viewing, well, I can do that anytime.
How long did it take you to
practice,
be able to
practice? And I've been doing it for many years.
How long did it take you before you were able to do it at will?
Probably many years. I first went to the Monroe Institute when I was 22. So when I was very young, 12, 13, 14, I was having these weird experiences. And my father took me to a place right here in Toronto, Ontario, called the Clark Institute. And they're a clinic, they're a hospital, or a place that, you know, looks at mental different aberrations and different things about the mind. He thought there was something wrong with me. Fortunately, they said I was okay, though, but they may not have asked me the right questions. But he thought it was really weird, you know, what I was going through. And so he took me there, and then he told them what was happening with me. And they wanted to know why he thought I was weird, but, you know, that's all going to be in my book. But it was kind of a sad thing, you know, and a funny thing at the same time. But basically, it took me many years to get over the fear factor. The fear factor is what held me back for many years, up until I went to the Monroe, where I learned how to get rid of the fear. Because when you're having a physical separation of the outer, you don't know, you know, you think everyone's having these experiences, by the way. But when you first start having them, and you feel yourself bilocated an inch, 6-12 inches from your body, you're finding yourself floating, it makes the heart race, right? You don't know what's happening. Right. So I had this fear factor, plus I had a lot of negative experiences when I was having unconscious projections, you know, and I would be
would that be at nighttime? Would you get nightmares, you mean?
Yes. They wouldn't be nightmares. They would be, I wake up in the out-of-body state already, right? And I'd have these experiences, demons or ogres or whatever you want to call them, you know, pranksters or whatever the name is. And for so many years, I had these kind of negative experiences. And there's a lot of negative energy in the M zone, it's called, in the out of body state. But there's a lot of negative energy of spirits that have died and they hang around, and they're in the out of body permanently, right? Because they're dead. You don't have to die, of course, to get in the out of body. That's my whole thing that I tell people, right? I give them good news.
So hang on 1 second. I want to get clarity on that. So when you're dreaming at night, and you have out-of-body experiences and they're negative and you meet the boogeyman and so forth and so on, are they on the astral plane? Like they've crossed over but they haven't elevated to a higher level?
Yes, so they're on what you call the astral plane. And I refer to that as locale 2. Locale 2 is the non-physical energy system of the universe, and locale 1 is considered the physical energy. So yeah, they're on the astral plane. And you don't know how to avoid them because you have fear. These beings feed on fear. There are beings that feed on various type of emotions. You know, the whole gamut of emotions they'll feed on. So if you have fear and it's coming out of you like crazy, you're bound to attract these beings and entities that just kind of soak up on that, right? And they increase more fear. They induce more fear. So I would head back to my body. I would, you know, go back and dive back in, or I would will myself to wake up, and I wouldn't always wake up, right? So these are out-of-body experiences. These aren't lucid dreams. But there is a fine line between the two of them, though.
How can you tell the difference between the two?
When you're having a lucid dream, you can control your dream content. You can control it. You can do all kinds of things. You know, you could fly, levitate. You know, you could you're director of that world. You can manipulate things. When you're out in the out-of-body state, You're projecting into the physical reality. And when I started doing it, I didn't understand the differences between the two, and it literally drove me crazy. It took me years to be able to tell the difference between the two. But I was told that so long as you know you're asleep at home or wherever you might be, you're sleeping and you're here, wherever there here is, that's the main thing to do for now. It's to separate your consciousness, but be consciously aware at the same time. So it's not an easy thing to do, but it is very doable, right? It's not easy. And so when you dream, you control your world. Like you split, you're the director, the actor, the producer. You can fly, move things around. You can wake up in your dream bed. You know, you can, you know, there's things called false awakenings, reality tests. You know, all these things that I learned to tell that I would, whether I was dreaming or not. And then when I had an OBE, I would know I was having an OBE because my room looked exactly the same. I felt differently. I could see my non-physical body. I could feel it. I could look back. I once went back to my body and I touched myself on the cheek with my non-physical fingers. And as I did that, I felt my non-physical face being brushed.
Wow.
At the same time.
So that's the positive out-of-body experience.
Oh yeah, you could do so much in the out of body and lucid dreaming. It's unlimited. It's only limited by your imagination. And I like to teach people this because people that might be physically challenged or whatever, I think it's a great thing for them to realize they could have lucid dreams that are extremely vivid. They're so close to reality that you sometimes can't tell the difference. I had that problem when I was learning the ability. And there's so much that you can do where you could just it increases your belief systems and it makes you realize that there's, you know, it's not just falling asleep and waking up. You've got four or five different type of lives going on: the dream life, the astral life, the physical life. You know, so it increases your awareness and enables you to explore other energies and energy systems. And all this here makes you more empathic. It increases your intuitive ability and it makes you more empathic and connected with the world.
Michael, can you, a lot of people talk about like how much of the brain they use. I mean, do you feel like, you know, we use a minimum part? I mean, how much do you feel like you have to use that someone like your level that can remote view, you can be an escapologist? I mean, do you have to use an additional resources of your brain, or is it different parts of your brain that
you're that's a good question. You can learn. You can learn to become smarter. You can learn to increase the cognitive neurotransmitters, you know, in your brain, but it takes time. I think we use maybe less than 10% the average person of our brain's capacity. Imagine what you could do if you could learn how to use 50% or even 100%.
Do you think, right? you utilize more than 10%?
Probably. I've had my brain image scanned at the Munro Institute. So they can tell you, they can do an image scanning of your brain. They have deep probes that can go 2-3 inches in your brain. And they can see the areas of your brain that are stimulated, whether it's the right or the left side or a combination of both or whatever. But a lot of people, they'll apply their logic more, right? They lose their feeling capacity as they grow up. What I mean by that, not their feeling, their capacity. I mean, they lose that the ability to connect with their higher self, or they lose that ability to connect with that childlike aspect of their nature. So they have a hard time to let go. So they become very linear, logical thinkers. There's nothing wrong with that, right? But then you want to be able to apply your right brain capacities, where you're abstract thinker, right? Where you pick up things in a non-linear way, where you could skip from A, you know, to you skip A, B, you know, you can skip the B and the things in between. So a lot of people are more one brain sided than the other, but the techniques I teach enable you to become utilizing whole brain capacities. That's one of the things that I really talk about. So I'm not sure, maybe 10% I'm using, but I haven't had my brain scanned in decades, so I wouldn't know. Maybe it's less.
I've never had my brain scanned.
I've never had my brain scanned. You say that you teach it. How do you teach it? How do people connect with you?
Well, I've taught it. Usually I teach it. I've taught it at open universities and various places around North America. And I have a course descriptions on my website. And I basically can teach anybody. The youngest I teach is 12 years old. The only thing you have is this belief is that you're more than your physical self. Because if you don't believe that, right, then there's no way you're going to be able to project into the second state, have an astral journey, or have a lucid dream. Most people remember having lucid dreams, vivid dreams, right? You have a vivid dream, but you might not have been lucid. You might thought, the reason why you're not lucid is because you think it's your reality. So basically, I teach all these things, including the remote viewing, and I'll go wherever the galaxy or universe asks me to go, I'll go to teach it.
Speaking of,
I think people love it. People love doing this stuff.
Yep.
They realize they can do it. Sorry.
No, you're all good. Speaking of where you're going, you're actually going to make a special appearance at the Mega UFO Conference on February 15th through the 22nd, right?
Yes.
At the Aquarius Resort in Nevada, everybody. So that is the Mega UFO Conference, February 15th to the 22nd at the Aquarius Resort. And that's Laughlin, Nevada, is that right?
Yes.
All right. right on. All right, Michael, my good friend, tell everybody where they can get a hold of you.
Well, they could. I have a contact form on my website, www.michaeltelstar.com. Telstar has two R's. And they can give me a call too if they want to, 437-234-7713. 437-234-7713. Oh, by the way, we forgot to mention that it was born on Friday the 13th, 2 on midnight.
Oh, more interesting stuff going your way. All right, everybody. Michael, thank you. You've been a great guest also. It's been fun to have you on. They've been a lot of fun, brother. Don't want to thank our previous guests coming on before today. We've had a good time today. Hope you enjoyed it, right?
It was always fun, Jay.
Yeah. It was good times today. So what
else? Okay, I need one more message before you go.
Yeah, sure. Man. Squeeze it in.
Okay, listen. If you want to see me, folks, just go straight up in the air tonight. Make a left turn, and I'll be there around 3 o'clock in the morning.
All
see
right.
Focus 21.
sounds like fun to me.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And remember, tune in often, tell all your friends, and most importantly, may all your dreams come true. Many blessings. Enjoy Awaken by singer-songwriter Scott Howard from his latest album, Ascended Man.
Look up and I see stars out tonight. Look up and I feel things just ain't right. Look up and I hear the people cry. I look up and I wonder why. Don't you want to know what is? Do we really exist? Is life but a flame? A star burning out? Have changed for me. I look up and I feel the ceiling has rearranged. Look up and I hear the dolphins cry. I look up and I just don't know why. Have we lost our way?